This episode is brought to you by The Great Grow Along. Sign up at greatgrowalong.com.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum, and I love to talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. If you're just tuning in for the first time, all the previous episodes can be found in the archives at heritageradionetwork.org. It kind of snuck up on me this week, but this is episode number 200 of Feast Your Ears. So for those of you that are just finding the show, you've got a lot of catching up to do. I'm thankful for listeners like you, and I'd love it if you'd leave me a review wherever you find this podcast. For those of you with kids at home, or if you know any kids, I'd like to be so bold as to suggest you check out my other podcast. Along with my co-host, Hannah Forden, the program manager at HRN, we've created Time for Lunch, a fun, food-focused show for kids. We'd love it if you'd check it out wherever you get your podcasts. I'd like to remind listeners that Heritage Radio is a nonprofit, and we need your help to stay on the air. If you enjoy this show and listen to the other great podcasts we produce every week, please find your way to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to make your gift. Today's theme, more better coffee. When I was a kid, it was all 8 o'clock and Folgers. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. I don't even know if they still run that commercial. Coffee came in a can, already ground. My parents drank it, and I thought it was gross. When I was 15, we moved to Northern California, where, in the early 90s, the coffee shop had started to become an important part of the social fabric. Back in Petaluma, we used to hang out at the Brick House Cafe, the Apple Box, and Cafe Passport. We were too young for the bar scene, and the coffee shop welcomed us. We started learning about things like macchiatos and lattes. Coffee was more than just black sludge in a cup, though it still did have that going for it, and of course me, like so many people, are addicted to caffeine. I can't get up without it. Back then, it seemed that it was the pinnacle of coffee. The Apple Box was the first place I encountered a coffee roaster, and they roasted on site, and they ground the coffee fresh for each cup, whether it was espresso or pour over. Little did we know how far it would come in the next 3 decades. Now it's commonplace to talk about the coffee, the grower, the roaster, the grind, the grinder, the water temperature, the pressure, and the ratio. A few weeks ago, I got on the phone with Sum and Kalina from Coffee Project New York. They started as a small neighborhood shop in the East Village, determined to make the best coffee for their friends and neighbors, but they couldn't stop there. As the business started to grow and they saw a need for advancement for their employees, they launched more shops as well as a training center in Long Island City that hosts classes all about coffee and certifies baristas and coffee professionals through the Specialty Coffee Association. Check them out at coffeeprojectny.com and learn more about coffee.
So my name is Sum, just like S-U-M, Summer, Sum, and I'm the co-founder of Coffee Project New York.
Right, and my name is Kalina, Kalina Teo, and I am also the co-founder of Coffee Project New York.
Awesome, and you guys are both from Malaysia, is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
And did you know each other in Malaysia or did you meet in New York?
We met in Malaysia.
Got it.
We're both, we used to be college mates.
Ah, cool. So yeah, so tell me a little bit about how the two of you met and how you decided to go into business together and start the Coffee Project.
It's way back. So Kalina and I met officially for the first time when we were doing a mentoring program for our by UNICEF. So it's called Mentoring Malaysia, where we are mentoring a group of teenagers who are from schools that has less resources and has a tendency of like they are looking for someone to, it's very similar to the Brothers and Sisters program in New York City.
Got it.
So that's how we met. I think we went to different school to mentor a different group. Am I right, Kalina?
Yeah. I think it's a UNICEF-funded program, and we were just volunteering at the program as mentors. We were, I think, I don't even remember. Are we in the same school or different school? We go way back. Like this, we're talking what? We're talking about, this is at least like 15 years ago, 14, 15 years ago.
I think so, 14, 15 years ago.
Got it. So yeah. It's been, and it, you know, and clearly you guys have done a lot together since then, so.
too much, Harry.
So tell me a little bit. I mean, okay, so this was back in Malaysia. You guys met in Malaysia. And then did you decide to do a project around coffee in New York in Malaysia, or did that come later? How did the coffee project get started?
Actually, that came way later. We were just pretty much just acquaintance back home. And then we both moved to New York. She came here for school. I came here for work. And then we met again in New York City. So once we get together, we both have different jobs as well back then, but we were hanging out, roommates, you know. And then down the line, we started dating, and then we see each other and we got together. And that's how we decided to start a coffee project together. So it was something that we decided to do it in New York. And it was because we both wanted to do something together as a little project. And therefore, we choose coffee. We both like coffee and we like to hang out in cafes. Yeah, maybe Kalina has anything to add on to that.
No, that is essentially what it is. So we started dating a few years in, and we were at a point, I guess, in our career. Back then, Sam was in IT, I was in social work. Mm. And we're both at a point of a career where we feel like we wanted something different, but we wanted to do something together also. And coffee seems to be, you know, a good choice. And then we just quit our jobs and dive right in.
Got it. So you didn't have any, you didn't really have experience in the coffee space before starting the coffee project. What was your sort of entry into it? I mean, I guess now I would love to hear a little bit about what Coffee Project does, because I've looked at the website and it's really interesting. You've got training for baristas. You did a project in February where you collaborated with Chobani on a scholarship program to sort of offer 6 African-American coffee professionals scholarships to attend a barista training program, which I think is really, you know, that's very forward-thinking and really cool. So tell me a little bit about, like, what was the genesis of the Coffee Project? What does the Coffee Project do? And why did you want to start it? Like, what was missing in the coffee space, did you think?
So initially, like back then when we first started in coffee, like started Coffee Project, our goal is just to have like a mom and pop coffee shop, to serve coffee, you know, hang out with the neighbors and talk about stuff. Think about like a bar setting where you go to a bar and hang out with your bartenders over a cup of a glass of wine or beer. And we want to do the same thing, but in a coffee setting.
I see.
Yeah, that's our initial goal. But down the line, as we venture deeper into the coffee industry, we realize that we're working with a lot of young adults or people who are really passionate about coffee. But being one shop alone, we weren't able to provide a lot of growth for our team members, because if they were to do more in this coffee shop, it's literally going to take our place and we will have like nothing else to do. They will, you know, and we both like making coffee and we like meeting people. We like the hospitality part of being in a coffee culture. So the first turnaround was pretty hard for us, where we have these baristas going to different places, taking up a bigger coffee position. And then Kalina and I thought about like, hey, how about maybe it's time for us to provide a pathway for growth for our team members. If not, then they will just be a barista for the rest of the 2 years and 3 years, and then they will just have to go somewhere else to do something else.
Right. That's a very Danny Meyer. Yeah. Like, I mean, Danny Meyer writes about like how, you know, he opened like Gramercy Tavern, I think, because he didn't want to lose great staff. He wanted to give them opportunities, right?
Yeah, it's very similar to that. So we started our second location where we have our baristas from the first location take up managerial roles. And then once we have the second location, we start talking to more and more of our team members. And eventually they start telling us that this is not just what they want to do. I mean, being in the barista is great. Managing a role is great. But we started hearing people who want to like compete in barista coffee championships. we started hearing people who were like, hey, I want to roast coffee. I want to teach. I want to learn a little bit more. So, and then we have our location now, which is in Long Island City, where we roast our own coffee and the campus, the Specialty Coffee Association campus. So just like how we mentioned something really important, I feel like maybe Kalina can have a lot more input to this, that what is the thing that is missing back then that caused, that made us wanted to start a lab or a community spot and a roastery? It's really because we're really missing a place like this in New York City. Do you think am I saying it right, Kalina?
Yeah, like just piggybacking on what Sam is saying, I guess when we first started, our goal was really just a mom and pop coffee shop. We just want to be able to, you know, make a coffee, you know, work together. And, you know, that coffee dream where you work 6 days a week and then have one day off, you are, you know, the boss of your own business. Never happened, by the way. so like a really wise friend back then told us that your business is eventually going to have its own life. It's going to take its own form. And it kind of did. That's sort of what happened to us, I feel. During, I think, the second or the third month in, we were mentioned by Time Out New York. And we started, like, things started taking off from there. Some did mention that we had our first real turnover. So we both worked 7 days a week back then. We started hiring, I think, our first employee probably about, 2 months in or 3 months in. So we didn't hire anyone because we couldn't afford to, also at the very beginning. We were just, you know, we hired our first employee, and then a year and a half, I think, down the road, when you lose your employees, you know, it's a tough pill to swallow. You're like, what did I do wrong? But knowing that they're actually looking for, you know, a bigger and better position, they're looking for growth, and we totally understand that. We were them, you know, and that's why it started, it gets us thinking, what can we do as a company to provide that? Hence, we have a second location in Brooklyn, and then the third location came about when some, just like some mentioned, we spoke to our team. Most of them are full-time coffee professionals. So this is really the career path that they want to take. And I think conversations that we have with our employees guided a lot of our decision-making when it comes to how we are going to grow the company. We realized that there's a lack of formal coffee education in New York. So Specialty Coffee Association is the organization that governs all specialty coffee related stuff, like research, like standards. You know, these are the temperature that you should be using, just because, you know, because the coffee will taste good, you know, at this temperature. These are the coffee to water ratios that you should be using. What happened is that we realized in New York City, most people got their coffee education through the shop that they worked at, which is, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But that also means that everyone's background and experience is very different depending on which shop you work in. So when we started diving really deeply into coffee education, we realized that why don't we have that in New York? Because in the West Coast, you'll find tons of coffee schools. We had to fly to Florida to get our certification when we decided to get certified. So we're like, hey, we're in New York. Like, how can we not have a coffee school? So that's why we decided when we have our third location, we are going to create a space where it's, you know, very welcoming. For all, like, it's not just baristas, it's just anyone who really want to learn about coffee. And yeah, that's how we became
I love
what
that.
We are.
Yeah,
today.
I mean, it's so interesting to think about because for a very long time, you know, I always felt like we were behind in New York. I mean, I felt like there were places to get really good coffee in New York. And there were, I mean, I knew many, many committed coffee professionals, but I always looked forward to a trip to the West Coast because I felt like the coffee was better and I could never really put my finger on why. But I feel like you just explained it in that there were people on the West Coast who were getting together outside of their singular shop and sharing knowledge and sharing techniques and kind of creating standards around what coffee should be as an industry rather than just in an individual location.
I have a funny story to share, actually, when it comes to that. So I got my formal coffee education initially from West Coast in Portland, to be exact. So when I first started Coffee Project in East Village with Kalina, I have this big mind of like wanting to do espresso tasting where people can get one single origin espresso and one double espresso as a flight. So my menu was like espresso flights, and I'm not gonna serve drip coffee, only espresso based drink with single origin pour over, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And when I plan out everything I wanted to launch, I realized that this is so foreign to everyone in the East Coast, especially even in New York City. It's right. Like people are not used to going to a coffee shop, sit down and enjoy an espresso flight. They are more towards like grab and go,
yep.
Give me an iced coffee, you know? So I'm like, oh my God, what have I done in my life? But one short period of my time, I'm like, Kalina, I don't know what to do now. What should I do? Should I rent the entire menu? And then we start buying this drip machine from like this crazy place and just put it in, and then that serving drip, which is 12 ounce only and don't even have any extra size. But we learn a long way. Like as we start Coffee Project, that's how we started talking to our customer, and then we listen. This is so important. We listen. We listen to what they want. They want a bigger coffee, right? And they want things that is like not foreign to them. Like be a little bit more welcoming, or like don't make them feel like they don't know coffee. So, and therefore, that's how we evolve into whatever Coffee Project it is right now. But back then, it was quite a rough path for me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, New Yorkers are so into their grab and go. So I grew up in New York and then lived in Northern California as a teenager in the early 90s. And I remember so clearly my father threw a fit because the local coffee shop had, you know, 12 different kinds of beans that they roasted themselves. And when you ordered a coffee, the barista like put a scoop in the bin and weighed it out and then ground it, and it was pour over. And he was like, you know, he was like tearing his hair out. He was like, I just want a cup of coffee in my hand like 20 seconds after I hand you the money. I don't care about any of this. He just wanted his caffeine. So I want to talk a little bit about that, right? That also people have these different relationships to coffee. And I mean, even me personally, I find I have a different relationship to coffee, even like day to day or even at different times of the day. Like when I first wake up at 6 o'clock and I need to like get my kids ready for school, I just want caffeine as fast as possible. Like, and I like having a good coffee, and usually I make an espresso, but really it's about the caffeine. And then like in the afternoon, I like have the time to maybe like have a good espresso or make a Chemex and that kind of thing. So I'm interested to hear from you guys as professionals who train baristas in this. Like, what do you guys think about that? And how do you think about coffee and the way your customers want to have their coffee?
Mm. You want to go first, Kalina?
I think, well, in New York itself, like you mentioned, it's a very grab and go culture. So I feel like from Monday to Friday, where people actually go to work, well, not now,
right?
COVID,
right?
But like in the past, or now it's starting to get a little better. I'm going to rephrase that. So it's getting a little better. It's sort of going back to that. You know, I need to grab my morning coffee, and what people really care is the caffeine. I'm not going to lie. But weekends, you know, when people have a little more time, I feel like there's this crowd that is growing in terms of, you know, appreciating coffee. So our way of trying to slide that in is, for example, in the past, we came up with the deconstructed latte. First, an espresso shot, steamed milk, and then the latte itself. We pair it with like a little cookie and sparkling water as a palate cleanser. So to us, it's sort of still like our way of trying to maintain what we wanted to do. We wanted to create, like, be this place where people can appreciate coffee and understand what goes behind preparing a good cup of latte, for example, because you have like people who had lattes their whole life but never really had, you know, a shot of espresso. It's a lot to ask people to order a shot of espresso in the shop when they only drink lattes. But when you break it down and present it in a very welcoming way, it's to me, it's easier for people to accept it. And of course, it's also an Instagram era. Right. So it looks pretty, yep. And people want to come and take a look at it and take a picture at it and try it. So it's sort of like our way of sliding into, hey, you know, you can appreciate, you know, good quality, specialty, great coffee. If you know, even if you just drink a latte usually. So I feel like Monday to Friday is still definitely like, I want my caffeine and let's go. Sort of idea. So even when we're training baristas, and when we are training our own baristas, or we're training for other people's company, we always tell people, hey, you need to work with a sense of urgency, especially because you're in New York. Regardless, you need to follow all these rules, you know, to make sure that you pull a good shot of espresso, have good quality like milk foam, put them together properly, but do it quick and do it in an efficient manner.
Right. Yeah.
And I think there's also a balance out to it. This might sound really new for a lot of us, but since COVID, like how people are not going out, or like some shops are not open, some coffee shops are not open, we have been in a ritual, like where going to get a coffee in a coffee shop has been a ritual for a lot of people to kickstart their day. Like I've spoke to a lot of our customers, our regulars who come in and say, hey, thanks for opening, staying open, because this feels like the only normalcy in my life at the moment, where I'm going into a coffee shop, grab a cup of coffee and talk to your baristas. And when I hear that, I feel like, yeah, actually, let's not forget also a big part of coffee culture, grab and go caffeine, is also hospitality, and also that whole experience on how you hand that cup of coffee to your customer. Like, how do you make them feel? Like, what Camino always tell everyone is, like, sometimes, especially in New York City, you could be the only one that these people in New York City are seeing more than their family members, because right. A lot of us comes from different places, you know.
This episode is brought to you by The Great Grow Along, a 3-day hosted virtual garden festival connecting you with the influencers, tastemakers, and cutting-edge content of today's gardening world. The Great Grow Along will feature 40-plus sessions on topics ranging from houseplants to DIY landscaping. New plant parents and first-time gardeners will gain practical advice and creative inspiration from celebrated garden experts and industry leaders. Costing $29.95, tickets allow attendees to mix and match a wide range of sessions, or choose to follow one of the conference's 6 tracks, which include edible gardening, urban gardening, pollinators and plants, DIY landscaping, houseplants, and dig deeper. The Great Grow Along will take place March 19th through 21st, 2021. Sign up at greatgrowalong.com.
I want to ask about what, you know, because especially in New York, it is such a grab and go culture. You know, I'm hoping that people who are listening to this discussion, you know, might be convinced to think a little bit about, you know, like what goes into making a cup of coffee. So I would love if you could sort of describe to me the people involved, the materials, the equipment involved to like get one of your, like your deconstructed latte into the hands of a customer. Because I think that in the world that we live in now, it is so important. I mean, I think COVID kind of, for me anyway, drew this into focus that, you know, it is important to think about the people that are involved. And that just thinking of people who are in a service industry that for such a long time, and even sometimes now, we kind of gloss over as just being like there, right? They're workers, they're just serving your, you know, you as the consumer. They don't even have a face or a name sometimes. But those are the people who during COVID were really putting themselves, and still are putting themselves, out there and being in a public place where other people have the ability to stay home. And so I would love to understand, you know, who exactly are all the people involved in that process?
Yeah, so I think although we're talking a lot about the front end baristas that we do, but a lot of times when you go to a coffee shop and ask for a cup of coffee, coffee don't just come in a bag. You have to go all the way back to like people who actually work on harvesting the beans itself from the producing country, you know. From there, you have people who like work despite of COVID, like a lot of like tension, stress that's going on in the producing country, and have it
sometimes
all bagged up. Yeah.
War, okay, sometimes. Yeah. So, so I just want to piggyback on that a little bit. So when we talk about a cup of coffee, and this is also some of like a very important point that we always point out to our baristas, you're not just a barista. You are the last link to the coffee supply chain. So I guess the most important message that we want people to understand is when you get a cup of coffee, like some said, it doesn't just come in a bag. You actually have to think, coffee is a fruit. It is a fruit where farmers, especially specialty coffee growing farmers, they have to work really hard on taking care of this plant, making sure that it grows. And when it's ripened, so coffee goes through a very similar process like wine. It needs to be fermented. So when this fruit is grown and has ripened, it's actually hand-picked. So the problem with coffee is that they don't ripen at the same time, even though they grow in the same bunch. So you would need to have coffee growers or like cherry pickers to go around and pick only the ripened cherries to ensure the quality of your coffee. So very labor intensive. It needs to be fermented. People need to take care of it. And then of course, carefully dried, packaged. It is also the second largest trade in the world. So a lot of effort goes into getting this item from the country of origin to where we're at, you know. So there's this whole coffee supply chain that we are keeping in mind. And of course, when it gets here, your roaster tries to roast the coffee to its best potential.
Right.
And then your barista, like especially that you mentioned, Harry, during COVID time, during a pandemic, you know, these are people who is really passionate about what they're doing. So, you know, like they wake up really early in the morning. Most of them have to take subways to get to work. They don't drive. And when they're at work, you know, they make sure that everything besides the coffee standard is up to standard. You know, the hygiene is up to standard. So there's a lot of stress that goes on to our baristas too, in order to get that cup of coffee in front of you in the morning.
Yeah, right. And given that amount of stress, that they can still like keep up to the standard that we want and still hand that cup of coffee to you and care about you, asking you, how do you do this morning? Good morning. It's a lot coming from our end as baristas and front end people.
Sometimes a cup of coffee is just a cup of coffee, and sometimes it's more than that. And I want people to kind of understand that and be aware of that. I wanted to bring up a couple of other things and talk about the fact that, you know, you are both immigrants to the United States. and what it is like to be an immigrant starting a business, working with a product that comes from outside the country, and then also being women. Like, I, you know, like in an industry that seems to me to be, at least from the outside looking in, and I've had other baristas and other coffee companies on this show before, seems to be getting more, there's more equality maybe than in some places and more than there was in the past, but coffee still feels pretty male dominated.
It's actually still true right now. But thank you for bringing this up, Harry. It's very dear to us, this topic. I shared this with a couple of friends a while back when we were talking about how we started Coffee Project back then in East Village. But when we first started diving into the specialty coffee industry and making coffee, it really didn't come into our mind that it would matter to us or to this industry that we are women, that we're a minority, that we're an immigrant. We just want to like focus on a product and chunk out good coffee and hang out with the neighbors, right? But there are a couple of incidents when we started, like we literally saw people opening up the door, going in, and then saw two Asian women behind bar and just leave. So at that point, it didn't hit us yet. It's like, oh, maybe we just thought they went to the wrong place for coffee. But the more we speak to people who are in the industry right now, the more I realize that that's true, that I have to work a lot harder. And Kalina and I have to do a lot more to be where we're at today.
Right.
You know, to prove ourselves. So a lot of education. So the things that we're saying right now, it's we need to have a lot of facts to back this up. Like, why do I say this? And why do you have to listen to this? That's because I've gone through this much of experience that I can share with you. It was rough. It was pretty rough. Yeah.
It's so interesting that you say that. I just heard a piece the other day on the radio talking about female scientists. And how there was a study done at a number of different scientific conferences that found that female scientists presenting their work in their papers got asked way more questions and way more questions basically trying to pick apart their work than male scientists presenting their work at the same conferences.
Exactly. Yeah. So the whole point about why Coffee Project New York is doing everything that we're doing right now in the coffee industry, aside from whatever they were doing contributing to the society, is how we are how we are doing our parts to know coffee, like education, going to competition. We're not trying to tell people that we can do everything that everyone else can do. Like for me, I'm just going to focus on doing my part as a coffee professional, not thinking much, but when you go to the national stage, you do realize that everyone who roasts coffee is male dominant mainly. You do realize that it is of a certain race and things like that. But now they come together a little bit more to me, and it's like, yeah, I can realize that all these hurdles that Kalina and I have to go through back then could possibly because that we are doing something that is not from our background. Like specialty coffee is not a thing in Malaysia. We do different types of coffee, you know, a lot of things like that.
Do you source any of your coffee beans from Malaysia?
We don't at the moment because we don't grow Arabica. We grow another different species called Liberica, and it's very hard to get our hands on, actually.
Interesting. Is that something that, I mean, would you like to be able to offer that? I also noticed you guys do tea as well.
Yes, that is just because we always have people come into a coffee shop and like order a bunch of coffee. They're all like, hey, I need a break. Do you have tea? So therefore we have our tea options.
Got it. Do you feel like the coffee industry as a whole has become more inclusive, and is it collaborative? Something that has come up over the years that I've been hosting this show and talking with a lot of chefs is, especially in New York, this idea that maybe, you know, 20 years ago, chefs did not share information. They were very guarded about if they had a fish supplier or a meat supplier or a farm they were working with or a technique they were employing or dishes on the menu. But that over the last 20 years, that has changed a lot. And now you have restaurants who, you know, will freely share ideas and supply information and that kind of thing, you know, and I'm not going to get into restaurant closures and COVID and that stuff, but I'm wondering if that's also true in coffee. Like in your years in coffee, have you seen a change? Are coffee companies and your I guess, counterparts at other coffee chain, small chains or coffee companies in New York, do you guys collaborate or is there, you know, is there not a lot of communication?
I think there's definitely a lot of changes in the coffee industry as well. Collaboration has been a thing that's going on right now. So we no longer are a coffee shop. We are a community in the coffee industry in New York right. City. So a lot of the people are starting to, like, different coffee shops collab together to do an event or, like, work on something. So resources is getting a little bit more accessible for everyone. So, like, a lot of coffee shops are business owner that I know who runs a coffee shop, for example, we share resources. Like, where do you get your cups from? How's it priced? Is the delivery fee, how's the delivery and all that? So I think this is one part that I feel a little bit, it's better compared to like years ago where we were trying to source on our own. Now we have people to talk to and we're also happy to be sharing our resources with the public as well.
Yeah, absolutely true. I feel like we definitely operate more like a community, like a coffee community, even sharing information or promoting, you know, our green importers sometimes. You know, we work with smaller green importing companies. We want to support them. So when other companies like ask, oh, where do you get this bean from? You know, we try to share information because only when the whole the whole supply chain does well, we will do well.
That's a really great point that, you know, even though you guys are the end of the supply chain, that really it is about making sure that you can still get that product in the future, right? And I, you know, definitely looking at like the big coffee companies, I mean, you know, I spend a lot of time in New England and, you know, like looking at a place like Dunkin' Donuts, right, where they're cranking out, you know, millions of cups of coffee a day and thinking about like, what does that mean for their supply chain? And what does that mean for the farmers and the harvesters that you're talking about who have to go tree to tree and pick each fruit singularly, right? Off the tree. I mean, you know, it seems like it's a race to the bottom unless they start to raise prices and raise awareness and start paying more.
Yeah, absolutely. Sustainability is huge right now in the coffee industry. Traceability, what's the other word that they use right now? Transparency.
Sure.
Transparency
right now is also very, it's a big movement right now in coffee.
So, Sam, I wanted to ask, in the pre-show questionnaire that I sent, you said you would want to have dinner with Mother Teresa. And I wanted to ask, what kind of coffee, like, would you serve Mother Teresa? What do you think she would drink?
I think for such a simple and honest woman, I would probably just serve her a really good batch brew that we have in the store, and I would love to sit with her with the same batch brew. So the reason why I picked her to have dinner with is because I grew up reading everything that she wrote. Yeah, I remember like maybe I was like 7 or 8 years old, there's this one saying that someone graffitied in the bathroom, the school bathroom, but it was a quote from her, which is great.
Wow.
I know it's a little disrespectful for the school and also for the quote, but it lives in me. And growing up, I just followed that. It says something about the ocean. Like everything we're doing, we think that it is a drop of water in the ocean. But little that we all know that without that drop of water in the ocean is one drop lesser. And and at 7 or 8 years old, I could resonate with that. And I realized that, oh my gosh, I need to talk to this woman a little bit more. And then I realized that she's way too above me. But yeah, I would love to have coffee with this, with my first son, really like dig her brain, like talk to her a little bit more, like how can we like really try to do this together? Yeah.
I love that. Do either of you have any plans? I mean, I'm guessing you haven't been to Malaysia in the last 12 months or so. Are you hoping to get back to visit family once everybody's vaccinated and stuff?
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely.
What do you miss most? I guess, Kalina, I'll ask you this. Like, what do you miss most about Malaysia? Like, is it weather? Is it food? Is it family?
Definitely not the weather. I don't know if you've been to Malaysia, but it is really hot.
I've never been there. The closest I've been is Japan in the summer.
Okay.
Which growing up in New York, I thought I knew what it meant to be like hot and humid. And then like being over in that part of the world, I like could not believe it. I was like, in New York in the summer when there's a thunderstorm, like after the storm clears, it feels mm-hmm. really good, right? Like it's like all of the humidity is like fallen out of the air. And I could not believe that in like Southeast Asia, like when it rains and thunderstorms, it's like worse after it's over.
Yeah.
Like
it's
so
every
nuts.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's every day.
Yeah, so definitely not the weather.
Yeah,
not miss that part. But definitely, like the people, like our families, and the food. Being in New York, we're actually quite lucky. It's still very accessible. You can go, to a Malaysian restaurant to try to get mm-hmm. something. But I went to school in Minnesota, like during college, and. Boy, that was hard. Like, it's very difficult to find an Asian supermarket, let alone a Malaysian restaurant.
Right.
So, yeah, being like the thing that I miss most about home is definitely the people and the food. We really wanted to go back home last year, but then the pandemic hit and we sort of had to stay put.
Yeah.
So hopefully, everyone gets vaccinated quickly enough and we'll get to fly again very soon.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you both so much for taking the time to chat today. I'm so, I have to commend you. I think the Coffee Project is doing, really, really interesting stuff. And I can't wait the next time I'm, in one of the neighborhoods where you guys have a shop to stop in for an espresso.
Oh, thanks,
Harry.
Thank you.
Yeah, come by.
Thank you for having us. Yep.
Thank you for having us.
And I'll continue to keep up because it seems like, it seems like you guys have been, you continue to innovate, it seems to me. And it's only been, 6 years since you guys founded Coffee Project? So, many, many more years of interesting things to come, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Fingers crossed.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much. Was there anything that you wanted to cover related to Coffee Project or coffee production or yourselves that you didn't feel like we got to?
I think we covered pretty much everything. Other than that, you mentioned about our Shabani scholarship, which I encourage many, many of you to apply to and follow us on our Instagram to see what we have for March, because we have a lot of things going on to celebrate International Women's Day as well. So that will be everything that we need to speak about, I think.
Yeah, I think, there are a lot of things down the pipeline. So if you could just follow along, we'll probably have some other scholarships coming up. We're trying. So I guess in a nutshell, we're just a company that is really trying to do good. It's just that we're in the coffee world. So we're trying our best to do that in the coffee world and trying to be as inclusive as we can. I guess that's pretty much what we really want to do as a company. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to Feast Your Ears today. Check out Coffee Project New York, coffeeprojectny.com, for online and in-person coffee education, and you can follow them on Instagram at coffeeprojectny. If you're in New York, get yourself a cup at their locations in the East Village, Chelsea, Fort Greene, Brooklyn, and Long Island City, Queens. You can find Feast Your Ears, as well as lots of other great shows, at heritageradionetwork.org, on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please reach out if you have any questions. You can reach me on email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com, and you can follow me on Instagram, @thefoodballer. Feast Your Ears is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.